From the job site to the boardroom, we've seen it all. I'm Jeremy Corbett. And I'm Kylie Green. Grab your hard hat and let's break ground, because success starts with the right framework.
Hey, this is our podcast called Framework. Today, we're going to talk about foundation. So maybe, Jeremy, you can kind of join me in what made, say, our company's foundation, or maybe even the foundation of our friendship. Maybe that's where it starts.
Well, Kylie and I, man, we just, you know, we got to know each other. I was working for general contractors here in Atlanta and, you know, project management, construction background, degree from college and all that. And I was working for a large GC here in town. Kylie was an architect, ran the industrial studio, and we just got to know each other organically through working together on projects, and just sort of had a natural chemistry and developed a friendship over time. And, you know, as we got better and better friends, we would kind of sit around and talk about, you know, what are we going to do long term? And, man, it would be, you know, really cool to have a business, and what would that business look like, and, you know, what kind of business, and just tons of conversations. So we really, you know, without knowing, we were kind of vetting one another and really kind of vetting ideas and all that. That's what we were doing in actuality. And so, you know, that happened over, I don't know, probably a 10 plus year time frame. And then we decided, hey, one day, man, let's pull the trigger, which was at, I guess, 2008, 2009 financial crisis. We decided best time ever, you know, we were going to start a small boutique design build general contracting business. And, you know, as everybody else besides us knew what was going to happen, it didn't last very long.
We wanted to, well, after we became friends, we both decided, hey, we want a business. Didn't really care what it was in. I think we started as the boutique type construction company, but when that didn't fly in a really bad time, we decided to park it, went our separate directions for 5 full years, came back to, hey, let's start this thing over again. But we realized during that pause that it meant that it mattered less of what we were doing and more that we were going to do it the way that we wanted to do it. So that's kind of the cool being able to do it again the second time. You generally go about it better than you would have on the very beginning. So he and I were like, man, we want to be able to make the decisions ourselves. We want to be able to, if we want to buy real estate, we don't have anybody else. If we're going to partner with anybody else and create anything, you know, new, we're going to be the majority stakeholders in it, because we, for whatever reason, think a lot alike. We make the same kind of decisions. And I'd say one of the bigger things is that Jeremy and I never, ever, ever sweat the small stuff.
We've got our extremely complicated tie-breaking system that we put into play when, you know, you want to go left and I want to go right. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. We started off with this 1 to 10. So if let's take this building, for instance. I'm an architect. He's a contractor. Jeremy's a little bit different. We're not... cost is everything, but it's probably more in line with cost than I would. So if we had a design decision and I wanted to put an angled wall in, and he's like, you know, whatever, I would immediately say, I'm a 10 on it. And if he knew deep down inside, and there's no lying to yourself or to me, if he knew deep down inside he's a 3, immediately he's like, you got it, you win. And the cool thing about that is you got to be able to say, I'm a 3, and then walk away. You can't come back to it and go, I'm a 3, but, man, you didn't make the right decision, and you know it, and then hang that other person out. You just move on.
That's right. And then it kind of, you know, over time, it just sort of evolved into, you know, we could feel one of these conversations coming on. You know, we spend so much time together, we almost kind of know. We always joke, like, you know, we're two halves of a brain. You put them together, and one of us can remember things, and, you know, one of us can talk about it. And so we finally get to the point where it was like, hey, we've got a conflict, and we would just immediately look at one another and say, you know, I'm an 8, I'm a 4. And then that was it, just as simple as that. So, you know, inside of a 10-second time frame, you know, we just sort of put it to bed. So, but, you know, back to the framework thing again, you know, we got kind of past all the history stuff. You know, for us, it's really at the heart of it's entrepreneurship, being entrepreneurial. You know, we always felt like we brought that spirit to the jobs that we had in the past, you know, as an architect and a contractor. We felt like we were solutions oriented. We felt like, you know, we could go into a situation cold, sort of, you know, take in all the criteria and take in what was going on and what had been done and, you know, where we were trying to get to and come up with a solution that sort of worked for everybody. You know, whether it was a financial goal or a design goal or, you know, something that was a specific client, you know, had an end goal in mind that they were trying to get to. And so, again, kind of without knowing what that all was leading to, it was all kind of leading down this path to really sharpen all those skills so that once we got to the point that we could start our own company and start to do our own thing and have full autonomy, you know, that skill set was there in the tool bag. And so, you know, we talk about, you know, what does it take, you know, grit and, you know, high threshold for pain and just a burning drive and desire to succeed and, you know, all those kinds of things. But, you know, everything that we do is rooted in that entrepreneurial spirit. So when we approach a problem and propose a solution, or if we're getting into a new business, you know, how we approach that new business, if it's relationships with new people we've never met before, if it's, you know, dealing with our employees, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, folks that work here now. We're you know, up to 140, 150 employees. And, you know, I think a lot of what people like is the culture that we've been able to build because we've got that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, we're growth people. I think that's a lot of what's associated with entrepreneurs, you know, trying to scale and trying to do more and solve bigger problems and expand your brand and, you know, expand your footprint and all those kinds of things. And so Kyle and I embody, you know, the spirit of all those different attributes. And so it's kind of just who we are. Just, you know, we always kind of say it's how God made us, man. You know, we love it.
Well, you know, getting back to foundation, you know, and every business starts somewhere. So foundation, you know, you kind of have to wear 10 different hats and, you got to get the checkbook out and you got to invoice and you got to estimate and you got to project manage and you got to, you know, get up in the morning and run the jobs and make sure everybody's, you know, so the foundation is critical to understanding all aspects of it. But I think what allowed us to grow was that we were very keen on what we didn't do that great or what we hated. And so we immediately were, you know, focused on how fast we can grow so that I could not do bookkeeping anymore. How can I sell my face off so that I could get out of accounting? I'm not writing any more checks. I'm not, you know, doing any more ARAP. So that was the key thing for me is I'm going to sell more and more and more. So we got more dollars coming in. And then when we hired our first employee, that was actually estimating. But when we finally got to the controller, we were hiring somebody that was so far out of our league, but we knew we had to have it. We were building the foundation of a company versus just two guys that wanted to have a business so that we could afford a lifestyle and a certain vacation or a certain boat. I think that's the decision you make early on. We started making those decisions. Hey, man, we're not going to bring any kids into this business so that we got to deal with, you know, how you get succession. We're not going to have the company pay for our vacations. We're not going to have the company do lifestyle, you know, creep type things. Those were conscious decisions early on. And we were unique in the fact that we had a career before this. So when we came into this, we were building a company that somehow we were going to have some form of an exit that we were thinking about early on that would benefit those that came on board with us, that joined that journey. And it wasn't just going to be, hey, man, let's take this thing and then finally dump it out. So the foundation at the beginning, I think going back to the while we're having this conversation right now, is that we built that foundation early.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also, you know, we're in the blue collar service based industry. You know, we've got, construction business and a painting and coatings business and, you know, a metal fabrication group. I mean, it's all construction based blue collar type stuff. And yeah, I think we're not unique people. A lot of people do what we do, but you know, we found certainly in the Atlanta market, you know, amongst a lot of people that we work with and know, we are a little bit unique from the standpoint that, you know, a lot of small business like us, you know, a lot of times you've got an owner that's skilled at, you know, XYZ. It could be welding, fabrication, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, you know, painting, you know, what have you. And there's generally, you know, a skill set there. And so that's what those guys are good at. They're good, you know, they're strong at what they do. They've got the skill set. They're likable. They've got a lot of clients. And they just start getting work over time because there's a huge need in those different niche markets. But what you generally don't get is folks that get just as focused early on at diversification, trying to figure out how to build their business so it can scale. You know, taking some of those risks earlier on in terms of hiring people that you're paying, you know, like some of those first people we were bringing on were, you know, we were paying those guys higher salaries than what we were getting paid. Right. And so we kind of, you know, would look at one another kind of, you know, behind closed doors and go, dang, man, like, can we actually afford to pay this person this kind of money? Yeah. And then, you know, the bottom line is, you know, for us, again, like, you know, we've always been very good at, you know, the delegation, but really seeing people for the specific skill sets that they have that are different from us that really would benefit. But at the end of the day, is a skill set that's going to help us grow and scale the company, which is what our long-term vision was. So we, you know, we feel like one of the things that has, you know, definitely set us apart, and really probably what has allowed us to have the growth that we've had over the last 10 years is really the ability to hire people that are smarter than us with at certain parts of the business that can come in and take that over and take it off of our plate so that we can then go focus on what it is that we do, which, you know, as I think a lot of people know, tends to be a lot more of that kind of front-end sales, relationship building, you know, kind of problem solving with clients and, you know, in-house and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the blue collar industry in general, you know, I'm trying to kind of bring this back to the foundational theme. And a lot of people that start blue collar businesses, man, they hire somebody to, you know, take care of a job for them, not necessarily something that they're, you know, going to bring in to sort of grow a piece of their business. And so they end up working in the business for, you know, like right now, you know, boomers are aging out, right? And everybody knows, you know, private equity is going in and buying companies right and left, snapping them up. And what's holding a lot of those companies back from being able to have an exit is they haven't built that infrastructure. They don't have, you know, an ops manager, and they don't have a, you know, business development guy or gal. They don't have a controller or a CFO. They don't have, you know, a director of marketing. They don't have, you know, risk management group, you know. So they're just not built such that they're investable by family office, private equity, you know, that kind of stuff.
So I think that's something that, you know, a lot of companies do or have done, and I think that's what you and I are trying to do. I think we've done a good job so far, is building a wide enough base that allows more and more opportunities as it comes up to us. And for you and I to not have, you know, day-to-day oversight and feel comfortable that it's going to happen the way that we would want it to happen.
Yeah. I've actually got a question for you, Callie. Who and or what was your biggest entrepreneurial influence?
Actually, that's an easy one. My father, because, you know, I think a lot of people that have family that or parents that, you know, started a business, if you're able to see it, it's a whole lot easier to understand that there's risk, but also be comfortable with the fact that you can do it. So, I mean, I remember my father, he was a fireman go 48 on at the time. He would go 48 on, 24 off, or maybe it was the reverse. He would do 24 on, 48 off, and he was painting on the 48 off. And he was making more money on the 48 off than he was on the 24 on. And he made a decision that, and my mom was beside herself. Just too much risk. And you and I spoke about this earlier. Just so much risk that she was begging and praying that he wouldn't do it. But he did it, and he just persevered. And it just was, he'd get up and obsess about it and put the effort into it. So I think that seeing that model for me would be mine.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, similar thing. For me, it was, you know, the work ethic that both of my parents have really kind of set the tone for me from an early age. And my mom also has had a residential real estate brokerage business for, I don't know, since I was whatever, you know, 40 years. And, you know, we used to always, you know, say, and I still tell people to this day, my mom is literally the hardest working person I've ever known in my entire life. You know, when you're a real estate agent, if you're going to be successful at doing real estate, you're on 24/7, right? So any trip we ever made, any soccer tournament we ever played at, weekends, nights, mornings, she's up in the middle of the night drafting contracts. I mean, she is on. And to this day, she's at retirement age, but she can't not have a lot of stuff going on. So, but you know, seeing her with her business and you know, how they've grown and how they were successful and just the, you know, the level of effort and dedication and not giving up and, you know, never taking no and just grit and all those attributes that it takes. A lot of people don't, you know, you don't understand. I mean, a lot of people, you know, you bump up against those kinds of things and you know, just any job that you have, right? And you got to persevere and kind of get through. But, you know, what it takes and the to the degree that it takes to go start and run and be successful. Because, you know, man, when it's good, it's really good, right? It's super fun, and it's like nothing else in the world you'd rather do. But when it's bad, it's like, man, it's the toughest thing you've ever done, right? And it could be lawsuits, it's employees, it's super tough clients, you know, jobs that go. And we've had, you know, I think anybody that's in business and service-based industry, you know, construction-based industry, everybody, and depending on how long you've been in it, you've got more stories than others, but you got situations where jobs go awry, and then, you know, and then that's when people figure out, you know, what your metal gets tested, and they figure out what you're all about. And so in those moments, we've always kind of taken a tack. We're like, hey, look, something really bad has happened, but this is actually, like, let's reframe it. This is a great opportunity for us, right? A lot of people, you know, you bump into those situations, and it's like, man, I got to go run and hide and, you know, call my attorney and start posturing and all that kind of stuff. You know, what we do every time is we reframe it and we say, hey, man, this is a great opportunity for us to show our client how we're going to get in the boat and be problem solvers and not immediately turn and get confrontational. And so a lot of times, man, you can take a bad situation and turn it into, you know, the best marketing sales opportunity that you've ever had based on how you handle the bad situations, because anybody can do it when it's easy, right?
It took something happen. And for us, it was the kind of the 08, 09 recession, depression that shook a lot of people to the core. Everybody kind of got, you know, shuffled out into new industries. And we realized, you know, hey, maybe this is an opportunity. We tried it, kind of stumbled. That was 08. Well, still, you know, still kind of had that thirst for it. But then we went back into different industries, kind of shook us up, then went back into different industries. 5 years later, I pick up the phone. Hey, man, I still want to do this. We've got to do something. So at that point in time, I had gotten a divorce. I was moved out. I was single, you know, raising kids 50% of the time. But I realized at that point in time, light bulb went off. This is my moment to risk it, because here's the opportunity. So I think that you either risk it early because you just don't know, or you have something that happens, the need is inside of you, and an event happens that allows you to do it.
If you're married and you have kids, doing it, it's a whole different ball game. And so now, you know, now you're putting your family at risk. It's not just you that you're putting at risk. So having a supportive wife and family is just, you know, you just can't understate how important that is. You know, having a cheerleader in the background that's, but man, you have bad days and, you know, you get home and your wife's like, hey, it's going to get better. You know, y'all know what you're doing, right? You're going to get it. Keep going, you know. There were some things that we say, hey, you know, God's got a hand in it, you know, for us. And a lot of that for us early on was, you know, a lot of the people that came to us, you know, and Nancy, when we hired Nancy for the controller position, you know, we still laugh to this day. We gave her, literally, she started, and we handed her like 3 or 4 sheets, front and back, legal size paper, that just was a list, just a literal list of things that needed to happen. And it wasn't, you know, mail this check to these people. It was set up 401k and get integrated, HR, and it just, you know, stuff like that. And so, and you know, she came in and just absolutely killed it and still killing it and, you know, integral to the company. But, you know, without people like that, and there's, you know, umpteen other people that are here now that have been here for a long time that were those same kind of people. And so we just felt like, you know, on that second go around, it was really, it was almost like it was meant to be with us. I mean, it's, you know, there's hard, there's fun, there's easy, there's sad, there's mad, there's all kinds of things, you know, kind of that spectrum that you hit when you're running your own business. But we had a lot of things that happened for us that were things that put us on a trajectory to have success that we're just, you know, extremely, extremely blessed and lucky to have happened, for sure. We used to always kind of joke around about, you know, our culture and, you know, what that meant. And, you know, that's one of the things that people, you know, love about our company so much. But, you know, if you really kind of sit down and really break it down, you know, and certainly early on, you know, Kylie and I just, you know, we kind of have this energy, man, and it's we're going to figure it out. We're going to solve it. You know, there's nothing that can stop us. You know, question the status quo. You know, there's a roadblock. You know, we used to sit down and kind of, you know, taking a page out of Matthew McConaughey's book with the green lights. You know, we would and frequently, you know, we sit down with young people, either, you know, kids of friends or, you know, acquaintances or people we work with that just want to send them over and sit down and talk to us about what we've done and where we're at and just get some experience talking with, you know, with an owner. And we would talk about, you know, red lights and green lights. And, you know, we just are those kinds of people at the core, man. We bump into a red light, you see a stop sign coming, and, you know, we turn off on the hog trail over here on the left and go around it.
Hog trail, huh?
What's that?
You went with hog trail.
Yeah.
And I mean, hog trail, kind of trail, whatever.
Yeah. And we don't see, or when we do see red lights or stop signs or even caution signals once in a while, we scoot around them. And when you're always moving forward, you can maintain some momentum. I mean, it's literally maintaining momentum. I mean, as soon as you stop and you lose momentum, and that's, you know, that's the same with anything in life. And, you know, it's been like that, you know, to bring it back to the culture, I think a little bit of what I was speaking to, we just have, that's how we operate. And so we've always talked to all of our employees, you know, about that. And let's be problem solvers. And man, when there's a tough conversation to be had with an owner and a client, let's consider all aspects of this thing. Like, what do they want to get out of this? What do we want to get out of it? What's going to be the best for the project? And let's sort of look at it from a 30,000 foot point of view. And then let's bring all of that into a conversation that's pointed, that's solution based. And generally speaking, you're going to, you know, those guys are going to be extremely grateful that you're coming to the conversation having, you know, considered, you know, sort of what they're trying to get out of it, what their goals are, while trying to move the project forward. But creating that culture and having that energy of problem solving and excited about what we're doing and just that entrepreneurial spirit that we bring to, you know, basically everything we do sort of created that culture. You know, one of the things we talk about, you know, is resilience. And, you know, how do you facilitate, create an environment of resilience? And it comes from us. You know, it starts with us, starts with that sort of foundation. You know, you've got to be able to push through. You know, you got to have a high threshold for pain. You've got to just know that regardless of whether you can see the light at the end of the tunnel today or not, the light's there. You just got to keep on the path and keep working and do it the right way. Because doing it the wrong way and you know, making shortcuts and all that, it's never going to pan out in the long run. And so get back on track, man, and be resilient. What it makes me think about is that old saying, you know, don't fall in love with it. Don't fall in love with it, right?
He used to say that all the time to, like, Tim, our first employee. He'd be sweating bullets over this estimate, and he'd be like, Tim, you fell in love with it.
That's right. Move on from it, man. Move on. Progress. You got to get it done, get it turned in.